SB Nation and Underdog Dynasty present the Underdog Podcast.
And welcome back to another edition of the Underdog Dynasty Podcast, AAC edition. My name's Dan Morrison. That's Emily Van Buskirk. How are you doing today, Emily?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm okay. I was sick all last week.
Big dramatic pause.
Yeah. So no, I had a pretty bad cold last week and couldn't talk basically at all. And that's why we missed a week. I guess
it's the best way. We did. It's okay. Everybody needs a week. You know, it's like.
Everybody needs a week, and we're going to take, I think, next week too. So don't tell anyone, but that's the holiday.
Next week is busy. All right.
The holiday. So, but no, so this is going to be the longest I've talked in a row since then. So I'll be interested to see if my voice just goes out halfway through.
Yeah, well, I'll be here to fill in if you need. So
all right, let's do it. Yeah, so this is going to be our bowl preview show. We're recording it after one of the AAC bowls has already happened. Apologies to Tulsa, can't give you a preview. Again, my bad. I got sick.
Sorry about it. But they won, so it's like, it's fine.
Exactly. We'll touch on that in a minute. First, I do want to go way back to Army Navy because you were there. And I want you to, Navy 17, Army 13. You're welcome for talking you into it.
I know that. I'm glad because, well, you know what it was? It worked out because it was in New York and, you know, it's normally in Philly, I believe. Mm-hmm. And so because it was in New York and we were going to be there for the Heisman, it worked out perfectly. And they did such a great job for the 20th anniversary of 9/11, having it, you know, it was actually in New Jersey, but, you know, and it was incredible. I mean, I saw, and it's crazy because I saw a bunch of people at the game that I hadn't seen in a while. And it was just like this great collection of people throughout college football that I got to catch up with. And I even ran into radio hosts from the Bay Area on the sideline and just all of this stuff. But everybody is right. It's the most incredible thing in college. I mean, it was nothing like it. I was moved to tears multiple times. And there was not a lot I could describe. I was trying to write my recap and I was like, this is so hard because it's incredible. It's America's game. Like it really is. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, the good guys won this year. So that's what matters the most. Right.
I guess they're all good guys though. I'm glad Navy won.
Gotta pack it in for Navy.
Yes. No. Happy for Ken. It was good to see him.
Yeah, just the way the season went. It was such a difficult schedule and a lot of difficult circumstances for Navy. So it was good for them to get that win at the end and get that share of the Commander in Chief's trophy. But you know, I actually was on a train that went by the stadium at one point that night, but I was not there. No, because I was in New York just for my own thing.
Oh my God, that's right. I think, that's crazy.
Yeah, so
that was my first time at MetLife. It was beautiful. Like the tailgating was incredible. The weather was not great, which was unfortunate because that did hinder some of the flyover stuff, but they still like the whole pageantry from they had all the Army cadets and the Navy cadets march out on the field individually in units. And that was so cool. And then they had I think they call it the Army Navy Olympics or something like that, where they have actual soldiers, Army and Navy compete against each other through football obstacle courses. Mm. So that was like really cool to see. And I think
so that's Navy stuff that you like never see just watching it on TV.
Yeah, you wouldn't have because it was before the game and Kim and I were down there right by where they were doing it. And I was getting like really into it and cheering and it was so fun. And then we got to see the Bill the Goat.
No, did he get kidnapped this year?
I don't know. There was two of them and I didn't know the whole story. So I actually did a deep dive on like where the goat came from and why. And so we got to actually learn about that, which was kind of cool. I could go on and on. It was incredible. I ran into my buddy, the Temple offensive and defensive coordinators. They were both at the game.
You had a good story go up about them.
Yeah, that. So I had written that story last year when I first met Matt Drinkall, the Army tight ends coach. He's a big fullbacks enthusiast. So he and I grabbed a picture together on the sideline and I caught up with him. And when I first met him, he told me about this group chat where all of these small ball coaches that came from like Kansas Wesleyan and, you know, St. Francis, like little small schools, they came up together and they're all really good friends and they check in on each other. They have like a group chat. So when he told me about that, I was like, wait a minute, I need to track these down. Like Will Hall is in one, all these guys. So that's how I became good friends with Jeff Knowles and Mike Yurimovich. And it just so happened that they came up from Philly to support Drinkall at the game. And I was able to talk to them both about, you know, everything at Temple and what they're doing now. So it was interesting to say the least, without getting too much into.
Yeah. You got all the Temple insights now.
I did. Yeah. And it's not pretty. It's just, it's a new worse regime than we thought.
It's a new regime for a reason. I think it's a safe way to put it.
Yeah. A lot of, and even a couple of the other people I talked to about who know Rod Carey, is not that he's a bad guy, I guess, but he's just not a good head coach is what we're hearing. And some of the things I want people to know were exaggerated. For example, the tweet that was going around, but the guy saying the strength coach's picture was in his locker and he was being harassed and bullied. Things like that were not in fact true. From what I was being told, some of the players were fabricating things and some of them had some emotional and mental issues, but there was enough bad stuff that the program needed to change. But I just don't want like the coaches portrayed as like, you know,
you want accurate.
Right. I think it's not fair to say that they were like going around bullying these kids and that kind of stuff. But I mean, it wasn't like an Urban Meyer situation, right?
Well, which Urban Meyer situation?
the most recent one, I guess. He wasn't kicking. Oh my God. Where did you get that?
I'm not a Jaguars fan. I am wearing a Jaguars sweatshirt though.
That's wild.
I can't tell you why, because it's again a sidetrack. So when Blake Bortles got drafted to the Jaguars,
oh yeah,
I kind of became a joke Jaguars fan amongst friends. It's like a secondary team to like root for Bortles. And, I'm from New England. I'm a Patriots fan.
Yeah.
It's much better being a Patriots fan than really any other team, especially.
That's fair.
I'm 25 years old. Tom Brady, I was like 4 years old when he got drafted. It's been easy.
That's crazy. Yeah.
But it became kind of just like a running gag that I was a Jaguars fan for while Bortles was there. So now I've got a few Jaguars things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I break Blake Bortles when he won that game against Baylor. That was like, beautiful. I predicted that, right? I was like a big Bortles person. And that was one of my first, I was at some bowl game, Fiesta Bowl or something. And I was a young writer amongst a bunch of older writers. And I had picked, you know, UCF in that game and everyone laughed at me and then they won. And so it was my first legitimized prediction. And people were like, okay.
You know, people gave UCF no shot in that game.
Yeah.
You know, that was a great game. That's the 2013 Fiesta Bowl.
Yeah.
2013 Fiesta Bowl we're talking about, people. It was beautiful. Yeah. And it's on, the entire game's on YouTube. If you haven't seen it, it's like 55-45 final. Really fun game to just watch.
It was incredible.
You see Bortles being the boat that he is. I'll maintain to the day I die, Jacksonville misused him. Didn't understand his strengths.
Bortles is one of the guys I've developed a new metric for drafting quarterbacks. And then like seeing how well they do. Mm-hmm. And it's called the thickness quotient.
Oh yeah. He's
and
a thick boy.
Yeah. And honestly, like I think the thicker you are, the higher trajectory of you are less likely to be injured. Therefore, like your career is better and, you know, longer. It's not proven in science, but if you look at the guys that are thick, Blake Bortles, I mean, you know, did what he did, but you've got Ben Roethlisberger has an extremely long career. You've got guys like, I mean, it could go on. I think Mac Jones fits in that category. He's thick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I forget when it was too, and this is a whole Blake Bortles sidetrack now, but like at one point in his NFL career, like 4 or 5 years in, he was like the number two all time in quarterback rushing yards on like designed rush plays behind like Michael Vick. Like average yards per rush or something like that. It was like Michael Vick, Blake Bortles, 1-2 for rushing quarterbacks. Like,
yeah.
Love Blake Bortles. Gus Bradley, terrible head coach, misused him. Doug Marrone, could have gone to the Super Bowl if they didn't get scared against the Patriots in the second half and turtle up. I'll maintain those things to the day I die. Blake Bortles was misused.
That's fair. Anyways.
Yeah, that's enough of that tangent.
Yeah, sorry. I don't know how we got from Army, Navy all the way to there. But
no, it's fine. We should just.
But it's fine. But anyway, so it happens. Army, Navy was great. We managed to stay for one half because we had to leave and go into New York City for the Heisman ceremony. And the first half was pretty straightforward, like a lot of what you would expect to see. There were some breakaway runs that I was surprised
happened. There's more throwing than I was expecting in the first
half. A lot more throwing, yeah. And I think that everybody was kind of shocked by that. It wasn't always pretty and it wasn't great, but they did.
But it's more to catch you by surprise.
They tried, yeah. But we missed the best part of the game. And, you know, the situation where Diego Fago has like the best play. I mean, reading the quotes from those guys about how that happened, it was like divine intervention.
Yeah.
That he was able to do that. So,
no, it was a great, great second half. And it's exactly what you wanted in an Army Navy game. It was close, 17-13, one score game. It was came down to, you know, effort and pride and just. Oh, so much passion pouring out. It was everything you wanted in an Army Navy game.
Yeah, it was incredible. I mean, just writing about it later, using some of the quotes, I was like, oh, I couldn't ask for. I heard next year they're going to do it in Baltimore.
That's, yeah.
Somebody Baltimore, was telling me.
They do it in Baltimore a lot. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, Baltimore, I was telling my dad.
Pretty big.
And I was telling my dad about it because he served in Vietnam, and my grandfather was a Bataan Death March survivor from World War II. So very big military family. For me, it was like more than just the game and just seeing these people that these young men and women that serve our country and what they do and what my family's done. So I told my dad, I'm going to take him either. I think when it goes back to Philly, I'll take him.
I was going to say, just a shame it has to be in Baltimore.
Yeah, I'm probably going to go. I'm probably never going to miss this. As long as they'll credential me, I'll go. It's incredible. So
awesome.
Yes.
Absolutely. Now, we do have some bowl games to get to. I'm going to start with the Myrtle Beach Bowl. Okay. And I'm going to say it's not really a preview because this game already happened. Tulsa won 30-17 over Old Dominion. Really,
to recap.
Seven of those points for Old Dominion were kickoff return for touchdown right away. It seemed to wake Tulsa up in a way. Yeah, Tulsa's defense played excellent in this game. Davis Brin looked really solid. They controlled the ball, a lot of kicking, really good. A lot of special teams in this game, good and bad from Tulsa. But solid, solid win. They covered. Sorry we didn't get to preview it. That's my bad. I'm sick.
No, it's fine. I'm sure people will survive. Good for Tulsa.
I would have picked Tulsa.
Yeah.
So mark that's a win for me.
I would also have picked Tulsa. I'm not picking Old Dominion.
It was really cool to see Old Dominion actually make a bowl game, though, given they were, I want to say 1-11 in 2019, didn't play in 2020, and started the season 1-6. So, like, just good on them for making a bowl game.
Yes.
So, it was a fun game to watch, all things considered.
Everybody loves the Myrtle Beach Bowl, but you know what's funny? Coastal, when I was in Coastal Carolina, they were like trying to predict what bowl game they were going to be at. And they were just like praying that they would not get that one because they wanted to go somewhere. Well, it's not just that, like, you know, for them, that's their backyard. And like, they really wanted to go somewhere. So
they got, the Cure Bowl in Orlando.
Yeah. So they got to go to Florida and they loved it, but it was funny. They were like, please no Myrtle Beach. But they were like, we could see ESPN putting us there because it makes sense.
Convenient. Yeah.
Right. It's easy. And it would have done well, but they were hoping for a different one and they got it. So we love that.
Yeah. Good for them as well. It was a fun game. This is a game that doesn't take itself too seriously as the early bowl games really shouldn't. Like the Bahamas Bowl, don't take it too seriously. It's about having a good time.
I love the dance-off in the Bahamas Bowl. That was like the best thing ever.
Absolutely. Great. Something I don't think enough people appreciate about these bowls is that they're really they're designed for in two ways, basically. The first is to be a reward for the players for a good season.
Yeah.
So it's supposed to be a fun time and a good time and just hanging out. And if a player wants to opt out, who cares? Because it is supposed to be a reward, not an obligation to go to these games.
Okay, but
as much prestige as you want to.
Yeah, I agree with you, but I am going to be honest and say that I will judge players that don't play in the bowl game.
And you have every right to. I don't care if they skip out on these bowl games, especially the non-New Year Six ones. Like, the non-New Year Six in my head are these prestigious things that, like, are a goal to win. You know what I mean? But, like,
it makes me wonder what kind of a guy is doesn't want to play one last game with their brothers. That as a team player, like, that makes me wonder.
I watched Jalen Smith tear his knee to shreds. Okay,
I understand.
I watched, you know, in his career, he was going to be one of the best linebackers in, like, the NFL, and his career was derailed by it. Like, I mean, I understand why you would not want to risk it on an exhibition game, but I think, so all I'm saying is these are a reward game, so they're just supposed to be fun. Mm-hmm. If you're concerned about your professional future, I don't blame you. Now, if you're going to be like a fourth or fifth round pick, I don't know that you're like necessarily doing yourself any favors by skipping. If you're going to be a first round pick, I get
that's what I'm saying.
I get skipping the Liberty Bowl if you're a fifth round pick or if you're a first.
I would tell you firsthand when I was last year, I was at the Senior Bowl and I was at the College Gridiron Showcase, and I was able to go. The Minnesota Vikings scout that was there, he let me shadow him and work with him for the day. So I was able to set meetings with all the players he wanted to meet with, see what he talks to them about, mm-hmm. do all the questions, all the assessments, everything. Cause I want to get into scouting. I love it. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you that they look at character. They look at who you are and what kind of team player you are. So
absolutely. And that's what I'm saying. Like, to me, it's a little bit in that case, like circumstantial, like I said, are you skipping the Liberty Bowl to like play for a game between 2-8 and 4 teams, or are you skipping the Rose Bowl? I think those are very different things. That's all.
You're a guy on the edge trying to prove yourself, I can only see it as beneficial.
If we're talking about a sixth round pick versus a second round pick, those are two different things as well.
Right.
You know, so like, to me, there's factors that you look into it. But the other reason bowl games exist are to serve as advertisements for the local area that they serve. They do.
You're right.
Like, I don't think people appreciate enough how much a bowl game is just a big advertisement. Like, we make fun of the silly sponsor sometimes, but like, why is the Gasparilla Bowl called the Gasparilla Bowl? Because it's marketing the Gasparilla Festival.
Yeah.
In Tampa. It's marketing Tampa to you as like a fun place to go and party. Like, you know. One thing I love about the Myrtle Beach Bowl anyways is that it doesn't take itself seriously and has that very laid back, like, we're just chilling at Myrtle Beach atmosphere to it. You get like the Ryan and McGee crew. They always like do the sideline stuff for the game, and I don't know if you like them or not, but I do. I think they're funny.
Marty and McGee are really good friends. Ryan's a good buddy of mine. Marty is awesome. He gave me help with my book. Yeah. Like, I love them. But what they do, it's so funny, is what Kim and I kind of do, obviously not for ESPN, but we do the same thing. Whereas we go to these cities and we cover the game, but we also cover the environment and the culture. Exactly. For college towns, I think it's important. So
exactly. And they always love to do the Myrtle Beach Bowl because they love Myrtle Beach. I watched the broadcast earlier today and they're on, and they made it just such a fun broadcast to watch and enjoy. So like, you got to love everything about this type of bowl game. And I know people say there are too many bowls, but they're not.
This is
so much better to watch if it's 2 p.m. on a Monday. What am I going to watch? The Myrtle Beach Bowl or a rerun of Friends? Or like what else is on that you're like so high and mighty to not watch the Myrtle
Beach Bowl? Right?
Like,
well, unless you're working, like, you know, I was, but like, yeah.
From home, so.
Yeah. That must be nice. We missed that one, but we have some other ones to preview. So
exactly. Our next one up is the Gasparilla Bowl. I mentioned it just now. December 23rd. That is this Thursday coming up. UCF in Florida. It's sold out, standing room only at Raymond James.
The Florida Mega Bowl.
The only bowl game that matters this year is the Gasparilla Bowl.
It reminds me of the semi-pro Flint, Michigan Mega Bowl. That's what this feels like to me.
So excited for this.
I bet. I'm going to let you wax poetic on this one.
Florida's a 7-point favorite. I don't know why.
Florida.
Florida, Emory Jones.
They're a mess.
Everybody's going to be playing in this game. Apparently that's a thing you can do. I don't know why. That's odd to me. They're a mess. New coaching staff coming in. I think I said on the last show that the new coaching staff, Billy Napier, was going to coach this game. That was a lie on my part. I misread a thing. I misunderstood a tweet I had read in whoopsie-daisies.
So he's not going to be coaching this game.
No, I misread okay. it. I misread.
Oh no, I was like, that sounds like something he would do. So I'm not surprised, you know?
Yeah, no. Anyways, Emory Jones will be playing. I think UCF has a very good shot at getting to him because frankly, as long as UCF has good pass rushers, as long as they keep him in the pocket and get to him, he's a little bit flat foot. I think they can defend him. Now, if they let him get out and run, UCF struggles against running quarterbacks. I think that'll be the matchup to watch, is how well they contain Emory Jones to the pocket. I don't think Florida has any interest in this game, to be honest with you. This is a lose-lose game for Florida in a lot of ways. I think some of their players might talk a lot about it, but I don't
know. This year is over for them. They just want it to be over. Like,
I know. I know some of them are going to be like, all right, we can put UCF in their place because they're up a D and talk, but like, let's be real. They've had a miserable year, and I don't think they're going to be that interested in this game. Florida's offense was big-time bad this year. Florida's defense was big-time bad this year. Mm-hmm. I'll be interested to see where Mike Keene's at in this game because I've had mixed feelings about him as the season's gone on. I've seen the progression. I've also seen a quarterback who still isn't really comfortable, but, you know, he's still a freshman, so we'll see where he's at against at least a very talented team, even if it's a team that maybe hasn't wanted to be there.
Right.
I haven't heard of any opt-outs from UCF other than, I guess, obviously Dylan Gabriel, who transferred to UCLA.
Yeah. Welcome to the Pac-12, Dylan.
I think actually UCLA is a pretty good landing spot for him. Also, stop tweeting at people who are transferring and stuff like that. It's gross. The way people tweet it.
I mean, I have been staying away from it. But,
like, players are allowed to transfer just the way anyone else does.
Yeah.
They transfer for any number of reasons. In the case of Dylan Gabriel, I think it's fairly safe to say he signed on to play for a different coach and he gave it a shot for a year. And
he was just, it for him? And he got hurt? Jesus.
And he got hurt and he wanted to go somewhere else where he could market himself with NIL. Don't get me wrong, that's a part of it. He wants to go to a good city to market himself. He wanted to get back out to the West Coast, where I don't know if you remember, he's from Hawaii. Maybe too much on the East Coast for him, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe he just said, I don't think this is the system for me. I'd rather be in Chip Kelly's system, which has produced quarterbacks like Marcus Mariota, who's from the islands, don't forget.
Yeah, you know? True.
So I think there's
people forget about Marcus Mariota, but, like, he won the Heisman.
They do because he had such a bad NFL career.
I know. Isn't that wild like, he is not thick. That is true. But it's wild that somebody like that could win the Heisman and like not do well. But then Christian McCaffrey, who didn't win the Heisman prior to this year without McCaffrey, the injuries, was
we all know beast. McCaffrey should have won the Heisman, though.
He should have. People want to say Derrick Henry deserved it over him. And I'm like, how? Give me one reason.
People didn't want Stanford that year. It's fine.
No. Well, that is the problem. That is the problem. I'm like, Christian did everything for his team. Mm-hmm. Literally. Like, he did kickoffs. He returned punts.
I don't want to get too sidetracked at the Heisman.
No, you're fine.
I'm incredibly mad at how this year's voting went.
That was crazy, right? I'm just happy at least Aiden got – second. I mean,
I thought Will Anderson should have won the Heisman, though, when he wasn't even a top four. Bailey Zappe, the Western Kentucky quarterback who shattered records this year, wasn't in the top 10.
I know
people don't watch football and they only check box scores and they only do it of certain teams.
I'll tell you this about the Heisman, because we were there, all four candidates. Yeah, well, we didn't really get to talk to Kenny Pickett because he wasn't there the first day, but all three of the guys were super nice. Super respectful, like had no problem with them as human beings. They were incredible. Bryce Young, super small.
Yeah, they list him at 6 feet. There's no way he's at 6 feet.
No shot, and not thick. Like, no. I could pick him up. He's like Jimmy Garoppolo tiny, like when he first started at the Niners.
We're going to have a chance to talk about Alabama a little bit.
I know. All right, we'll get there.
I'm glad you mentioned Jimmy Garoppolo at the 49ers, because, man, is he handsome. Love it.
He is not handsome, and he is not thick, and that is why he got hurt.
You don't like Jimmy. You're the first.
No, I don't like Jimmy G.
First person I've ever met who hasn't been like, yeah, he's
hot. Yeah, no. No, ew, no.
Oh, let me tell you what. Every, I guess, young woman, that's the best way to word it, who's my age when Jimmy G was on the Patriots when we were all in college, they made you feel bad that you didn't look like Jimmy G.
You know, college,
I prefer Jimmy G's face.
Yeah, a college age girl, I could understand that, but a grown woman knows better, A. And B, I stood next to him in a suite at the Sharks game because at the time, for a nanosecond, I was kind of dating one of the offensive linemen for the Niners. And so I stood next to Jimmy G and I literally could have picked him up and broken him over my knee. Now, I'm not a tiny girl. I played soccer in college. Like, I have curves. I'm with the thickness, okay? But I'll tell you what, you do not want a quarterback leading your team that I could break, okay? That's not going to end well for you. And it didn't. He tore his MCL, whatever, ACL later.
He's had injury issues throughout his career.
He tore his ligament running out of bounds to avoid getting tackled. Like, what the?
I mean, that's how a lot of ACLs happen. That was non-contact.
It was bad. And I knew it was coming. I was like, this is not the guy. And he hasn't been the guy. And it's a matter of time before he gets replaced. And they should have just done it a while ago.
Well, it's going to happen after the season because they drafted Trey Lance. But the Gasparilla Bowl, though, is what we're talking about.
Well, we were. Do we not finish? Are we picking teams in these?
Yeah, I think we are because you need to catch up because don't know if there's enough games.
I don't think I will. That's fine.
Yeah, we'll pick teams just to keep with the theme.
Okay.
This game, the energy is going to be good. I expect it to be like 60-40 UCF fans in the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
That's my expectation. I don't know that I'll be right, but it is a sellout. I think the atmosphere is going to be incredible. I think it's going to be a ton of fun. Honestly, I just want a good game. Like I said, it's an exhibition. Ultimately, these two have a series of games scheduled in the next few years. So like it isn't like this, because those games get scheduled, this isn't like the only chance they'll get to prove who's better.
Yeah.
But it is.
It's for recruiting. It's for bragging, right? It's for a lot of things.
It is for a lot of things. I think UCF's a little bit more stable position, though. UCF did just lose its offense coordinator and quarterbacks coach today.
Mm-hmm.
GJ Kenny took the Incarnate Word head coaching job. That happened. That was reported earlier today.
That's fun for him.
Yeah. I mean, it's a head coaching job. So he's moving on to that. So I guess that's a little instability on their coaching staff, but he was only co-OCing Gus Call's plays. So
here's my thing with the game. This is what I'll say. For me, it's about UCF's defense.
Yeah.
Which defense is going to show up? Is it going to be the team that allows an average of 40 points a game in their losses? Or is it going to be the team that can actually hold opponents to 17 points? So if the defense decides to come to play, I pick UCF all day because I think then they win across the board. But if they struggle, Florida will take advantage of it because they have athletes on their team.
Undeniable. So. Tons of raw talent on Florida.
Yeah.
I think the trick with UCF's defense is, do you remember the Louisville game? I'm sure you do. How Malik Cunningham got to the edge pretty easily.
Mm-hmm.
Running the ball. If Emory Jones starts taking off and can hit the edge, or like if he's not kept to the pocket, that's when UCF will be in trouble. So I think it's going to be pretty imperative that guys like Ricky Barber get a push up the middle and Big Cat Bryant gets quick off the edge, which he's capable of.
I think I'm going to pick Florida.
Well,
I'm sorry. I know you're going to pick UCF. So
yeah, of course, UCF. You know,
I just don't see Florida. Like, now the more I think about it, the more like recruiting wise and like program wise that this is key for Florida to win this game because
it's key for Florida to not go 6-6.
It's in for this one in particular, because if you lose this game to UCF, like you lose the state of Florida, and that like, if you can't in-state recruit.
Yeah. Well, they like to pretend that they're recruiting against someone other than UCF.
I agree, but we know. But you and UCF's
moving
to
the UCF's moving to the Big 12 in 2 years' time, 1.5 years' time, however long it is.
I don't know.
I'll talk about the recruiting rankings a little bit in a little bit, but I think you're starting to see that the Big 12 stuff click in recruiting because we'll talk about that at the end. I'll mention some of that at the end.
All right. I promise that was our longest preview of all the
games. In all fairness, half that preview is talking about Jimmy Garoppolo and whether or not he's handsome.
Worst.
Definitively, yes.
He's not.
The Hawaii Bowl on December 24th. This is one of my favorite games every year because I get to yell at my family to stop watching Christmas Story because we're going to watch the Hawaii Bowl. This year it's Memphis versus Hawaii. I'm very interested in this game from Hawaii's point of view, actually. Because they're having, did you read the SF Gate article on Todd Graham at Hawaii?
Yeah, I did. I did read it.
A lot of players went on the record, or, you know, anonymously went on the record with that, which a lot of players are transferring out. A lot of players, he straight up, according to some players, first off, read the SF Gate article, because I'm just going to be, what I'm saying, it comes directly from that article. Players were saying that, like, he told them to their face, he's using them as a stepping stone. Players did not want to go to a bowl game because he bragged.
A lot of coaches use their jobs as stepping stones.
Yeah, but they don't tell players.
But they should know that.
Players
we're not children.
Players complain that he doesn't know their names. Players are talking about how he's abusive to both them and the staff verbally. Like, he doesn't coach them hard. He coaches them by insulting them. You know what I mean? Like,
also, let me say this. Let me say one thing. I don't know. I obviously read the article. It was upsetting to me because I know Todd Graham from his time at ASU. And that was when I was first getting into the industry. He was very good friends with my mentor, Kevin Gemmel, who wrote at ESPN. And so I saw that side of Todd, of Coach Graham, that was good and kind and helpful in my career early. So it is really hard for me to rationalize that person with the person that's being reported on. I don't want to discredit the players, but that is a different man. I don't know who that guy is because that's not Todd Graham.
Yeah. And what I'll say is I have no relationship with Todd Graham. I read it. You know what I mean? Like, my knowledge of him is where he's been. Like, basically, I know
you probably never even watched him at ASU.
I watched a couple of ASU games, but yeah, I know his resume. I watch Hawaii football because I really like Hawaii football,
right?
Like, very broadly speaking, I like that program, so I try to watch it every chance I get. Yeah. This article is one that it's very upsetting, really, if you care about Hawaii. Or in your case, like, if you care about Todd Graham,
it's upsetting all around. I'm curious why it's in SF Gate.
So there's a podcast, M Mountain West Wires podcast, I believe it is. Mm-hmm. And they interviewed him. And the guy who wrote it is a freelance writer who's freelance journalist. He lives in San Francisco and has a good relationship with the SF Gate editor. And
did it say who from it was?
Hawaii. He's from Hawaii. Yeah, they interviewed him for the episode that I listened to. But he basically said that he heard rumblings because he's from Hawaii about it.
Interesting.
And then a few players came to him. He believes because he's not local media, so he's not connected in the way that, like, he's not playing access journalism with Hawaii in a lot of ways.
Mark DeLucci. I have no idea who that is. Yeah. That's very interesting.
He said he's Hawaiian, so he had a connection without being local currently.
Huh.
He's in relationship with the SF Gate editor, which is why it ended up there. So it's a freelance piece.
Interesting. Okay, well, I don't know. How does this affect Hawaii in this game against Memphis, I guess?
If the reports are true, the team doesn't want to be there. Hawaii doesn't want to be there for this game. And they're upset that they're going to it because it means that he gets an extra bonus check. And they're mad about that because the program is broke and is playing in a souped up soccer stadium. And there's a lot of frustration in that program right now.
Yes, that I will say. Yes.
You know,
so Memphis is walking into a situation that they should be able to take advantage of.
I would agree with that, except for the fact that Memphis itself has had issues this year.
and they lost Mike McIntyre. So
he's the FIU head coach now.
Yep.
Calvin Austin opted out of this game. Like I said, don't begrudge a guy for opting out of a minor bowl game. You know what I mean? He's got, I have no idea where in the draft he'll go. Probably middle rounds if I had to take
it. Definitely middle. Interesting. Yeah,
you know what I mean? Would he have done anything in the Hawaii Bowl that proved like he should go higher? No, because it's Hawaii's defense and they're terrible at defense. You know what I mean? Like, debate, if you will, whether or not it hurts his draft stock as a guy who quote-unquote on his team. I don't know. But Memphis is missing some guys. Their defense is going to be without its coordinator. I actually don't know off the top of my head who's going to be calling defensive plays for them now. You know, but
I actually don't either.
Hawaii's got its own internal issues. So,
yeah.
Memphis is a 6.5 point favorite. I think that's a pretty safe bet at 6.5. I think that.
Yeah, I would pick Memphis.
And against them, still be able to pick them apart pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I think they're overall a better team and a little bit less of the turmoil.
Exactly.
I just think they have more talent. So I think we're going to see Memphis win that as well.
Cheer, cheer. Ooh, yay. Ooh. moving on to the Military Bowl on December 27th. That's ECU versus Boston College.
I got to say, like, not super excited for this. Like, I don't know. Boston College doesn't thrill me as an opponent for ECU.
I don't
know why.
Is it because Boston College is like historically the least thrilling ACC team beside of Wake Forest?
Probably. That's probably it.
You know what I mean? Like it's BC. No, I'm in Massachusetts right now. My first major college football game, like FBS level game, was Notre Dame at Boston College. And it was 17-0. Boston College beat Jimmy Clausen in Notre Dame. And it was terrible because
Jimmy Clausen.
I was there with a bunch of Boston College season ticket holders. And I actually don't hate BC, but a lot of people who go to UMass do hate BC. So maybe I should.
I think it's going to be interesting because, you know, BC is very physical and strong. That's kind of, they've always played that kind of old school football. And then, but Jeff ECU. Jeff
Hafley's a defensive guy and he. Love
yeah, defense, so. He does. And ECU is, while they are scrappy, I think they're a little more like athletic and come at you. They're not like, I don't want to say it's like Goliath and David, but
no, that's, I think,
you know what extreme. I mean?
Yeah.
Well, no, yeah, but I feel like it's, any, like, they're both.
I get what you're saying though. Like,
you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, Phil Dracovic.
ECU scrappy, but they're not like big physical, you know?
No, they're a small team in terms of size. In terms of stats, they're smaller. No,
but they fight hard, but
they do. BC actually has struggled this year against the run defensively. Okay. So I think there's room to exploit that if you're ECU. Phil Dracovic has had a hand injury for most of the year. He's playing in this game. He's coming back for next season. I think he kind of was hoping to play this year and go into the draft, but the hand injury kind of shot that in the nip that in the bud, I guess is the best way to put that. That happened against UMass. He injured his hand, so go you. Good job keeping Dracovic at Boston College another year. He's actually a good quarterback, though. He's got good mobility, good arm strength. This is the tricky thing is I'm trying to remember if I saw anywhere that Zay Flowers, the really good wide receiver for BC, he opted out or not.
I think he's playing.
I was going to say, I haven't heard of him opting out, but I could have missed it too. This is the trouble with bowl season is
five. No, he's expected to play is what I'm seeing. So.
So yeah, that's going to be priority number one for ECU secondary is trying to find him, probably double team him because he's an NFL wide receiver. You know, I'm just happy ECU made a bowl game, though. I don't really care about the result for them. Like,
that's fair.
I mean, like, obviously you want to win if you're ECU. And
I think they do beat Boston College. I would pick them. Yeah, I'm going to pick them in this game.
I'm going to take BC.
I think David beats Goliath.
I mean, I hate calling Boston College Goliath. I hate it so much.
You know what I mean. Yeah. Do you want me to call it Jack and the Beanstalk and they're the Beanstalk?
No, that's not better.
I don't know. Is that better? Okay.
No, it's just, it's a medium-sized guy versus like a littler guy. That's all. It's not quite that extreme.
They need to write a fairy tale about that then. Cause I don't know. I don't know what to call that, but I'm going to take ECU.
Yeah. I'll go BC because I think that it's going to kind of become, I think it'll become a shootout. And I think that, I guess I trust Phil Dracovic a little bit more than I trust Holton Ahlers.
Yeah, we know. We know you don't trust Holton Ahlers fully. I saw that one coming.
Wonder why. But again, like I said, still a great year for ECU, whether they win or lose. Winning's obviously better than losing, but awesome, awesome year to even make a bowl game with where they were at when Mike Houston first got there. Right? We can agree on that?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Moving on. Birmingham Bowl, December 28th. That's Houston versus Auburn.
This might be the one I'm the most excited about, barring the Cotton Bowl. This is a very interesting matchup, I think.
It is. Bo Nix is gone, so I believe – actually, I believe TJ Finley will be the starter for Auburn. Tank Bigsby hit the transfer portal for like 12 hours before taking his name out. Very disappointed he did this. I assume with anyone leaving Auburn that UCF is first in line to get them.
The transfer portal is wild. It's a wild thing to watch. It's, I can't, it's too much.
It's a lot of change for how teams are built. And the reality is, like, when you get a new coach in, a lot of players seem to like they're giving them 1 year and seeing if they like them or not. And if they don't, they're saying bye, which I think is perfectly fair, to be honest. I think it's fair. You recruit, like, if you're Tank Bigsby, say, or you were recruited and signed to play for Gus Malzahn. He's not there. Right. They brought in this other guy who they chose for you. He's got a completely different approach to practice, say. He's got a different offensive system. You know, he's a different person. You know what I mean? So it's not necessarily a knock on Brian Harsin, but you didn't sign on to play for Brian Harsin or whatever Ryan Mix coach he brought in or whatever offensive coordinator he brings in. So you should be allowed to go and say, like, no, I want to actually play for this coach now, the way Bo Nix did when he left. Or the way, like I said, or the way Dylan Gabriel did when he left UCF, because he didn't sign to play for Gus Malzahn. He signed to play for Josh Heupel. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's just, it's going to take getting used to for fans, I think, and getting used to for teams and how they put together things. And, you know, it's just a change. But yeah, Auburn's going through that. On Houston's side of it, though, they lost to the only Power 5 team they played, and they lost to Cincinnati, the only, like, good – like, I shouldn't say the only good team, but, like, kind of the only
the good real team. Challenge. The real challenging game they had.
The only ranked opponent they played, let's put it like that. So, like, you had
– they lost to them in spectacular fashion, though.
Really awful.
So, that – not great.
So I guess my question is, like we were saying about Florida, Auburn did not have the year that they wanted to have, and they're dealing with, like, attrition at this point, but they still have a ton of really good raw talent on that team. Are you able as Houston to go in there and prove that you can compete with a team that has that type of talent, or was all your success against teams that just didn't have as much talent as you do? And, you know, like, congrats on winning 10 plus games, but who'd you beat? Like, I hate to do the who'd you beat thing, because FBS football is FBS football, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, but I think you can point to the statistics. Like, yes, they played not great teams, but Clayton Toon and, you know, McCaskill still managed to put up impressive numbers, even though they're playing down. So I think that Auburn is getting handed a little bit in this game because they're SEC and they're getting bias. But I honestly feel that if Houston plays the way we've seen them be capable of playing and McCaskill has a game, Toon has a near perfect game, doesn't make any mistakes, I think Houston can win this game. And they should be getting more respect being that they're ranked. I don't know where the disrespect, I mean, I do know where it's coming from, but SEC I don't versus like
AAC.
It.
That's what
I
it is.
I hate it.
And
that's why, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, Auburn's a 3.5-point favorite, and that's why they are. Yeah, that's my thing is I don't think Auburn's that good a team. I think, well, I don't think I know that there's a lot of, like, infighting at Auburn about Brian Harsin already and the direction of the program under him, because that's what Auburn does is they infight. You know, it's not a super healthy situation. He had to let go of Mike Bobo as his offense coordinator. I thought Bobo was a weird hire to begin with, to be honest, because
agreed.
I got it. He wanted to bring in a coordinator with SEC experience because he had none, but Bobo had not had SEC like success. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I would have maybe gone for a guy who's had been around a little bit less, but had more upside. But that's what second chances are for, I guess. I don't know. But no, I mean, how much is, like, we've been talking about Florida. Florida wants to be there because they don't want to lose the state to UCF in any way, shape, or form. What's there for Auburn at all in this game?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. There's nothing, but there's I will say this,
but like, how much
Auburn's defense is, you know, an SEC defense. They're formidable. So
yeah, but their offense is dreadful.
Oh yeah. It agreed. But
the defense is really, really, really good too.
It's good. Yeah. So I feel it's going to be low scoring, but the question is, like you said earlier, that comes back to quality of play. Did Houston play enough defenses like that were good enough tests to play a defense like this?
Cincinnati was a defense than Auburn, but yeah, I mean, other than that,
and that didn't end well for them. So
no,
don't know. I want to pick Houston in this game because I think they're outright the better team, but I don't have a lot of faith in them winning big games. Look what they did with Texas Tech to start the season.
Yeah,
I know they're come a long way, but
I'm going to pick Houston because I don't like Auburn.
I'm going to pick Houston too, but I feel like they're going to break my heart. No, and I want to go on record as saying everybody was talking about Brandon Jones leaving. No, he was not. He's not going to leave. And if he was going to leave, I would have heard about it, first of all. And second of all, he's one of, if not the highest paid position coaches in college football. He has a very good deal in Houston. His family's in Texas. Yeah. He likes it there. So moving to USC, first of all, that report was ridiculous. They were courting him and they were trying to negotiate a deal, but it was nowhere near done. Not even close when that was reported.
It was heavily implied that it was like done and in the works by people reporting that. Shout out to you for knowing better.
Thank you. Never get any credit, but I'll take that.
That's how it works. The Fenway Bowl, December 29th, Virginia versus SMU.
The Wasabi Fenway Bowl.
Yeah, I don't know what that is. What is that? I don't know.
Like Wasabi the food is sponsoring it?
No, it's not Wasabi the food because I was writing a preview article about it earlier today, so I know it's
that would be incredible because it'd be free sushi for everybody. Sushi.
I think they're having trouble selling tickets to this game, to be honest. I saw them releasing like new packages for tickets and like get a free soda and hot dog for a family of four tickets.
That's an SMU special. That is an SMU move right there. They do that for all their home games, by the way.
Wasabi.
That's an SMU move.
Wasabi Technologies.
Oh, technology. Okay.
Well, hot cloud storage. I don't know.
Wasabi for like the food would have been better. The seasoning been. Or I don't, what do you even, is wasabi a food?
Yeah.
Or is like a,
it's when like the little green ball you get with sushi.
No, I mean, I know what it is, but is it considered? No, it's a plant. Wasabi or Japanese horseradish is a plant of the family. I can't even say it. Mustard, horseradish and mustard and other genre, a paste. So it's a food.
Yeah. It's a food.
It's a food. Okay.
It's a food.
It's a food. I'm just like, I don't know. I thought it was like a condiment, technically, because it kind of is. It's a paste.
Condiment's a food.
Is it?
I would say so. It's a category of food. You eat it, don't you?
Is a condiment a food?
Yeah. You eat it, don't you?
I'm going to tweet this out because let's bring Joey into this.
Yes. I mean, I haven't talked to him in a while. He's the expert.
Yeah, he would. His word is law. When people ask him, like, is a hot dog a sandwich, they take his answer as verbatim. So.
I once wrote a freelance article on whether or not a hot dog is a sandwich, and I believe the answer is technically yes, by like FDA definition, but that's a whole other
story. But it's a gut feeling,
Come on, we all know a hot dog's a hot dog, not a sandwich.
It's not a sandwich, yes. That's what he says, too. He says it's its own thing. Anyways, this matchup is one of the least exciting things I've ever seen in my whole life.
Well, I think there's storylines to it.
Not excited.
They're doing pre-stuff at the Cask and Flagon, which is great for those of us who care about the Red Sox. It's at Fenway Park, which has hosted Shamrock Series.
That is cool. I love when they do bowl games.
It's gonna be a really unique.
I love
look.
That.
If no one's ever seen a football game at Fenway Park, it's a really unique look.
That sounds
cool. No one's ever seen a game from Fenway Park. The chairs are all designed for people from like 1912 in terms of the size of their waistlines, and for some reason they couldn't manage to get any of them to quite face the direction you need to. And there's like poles that block your view half the time. So like, know what seat you're buying, I guess is the best way to put that.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
You should always look at what seat you're buying any game you're going to.
A lot of people don't realize, like, there's tickets you can buy at Fenway Park where, like, your seat will be aimed at center field and there will be a pole blocking the way towards home.
Like obstruction. Oh my God. So yeah. A guy on our site, Campus FB Tours, his name is Mike Barker. He actually does that. He finds obstructed seats in stadiums. So that's funny that you say that, but a lot of places
Fenway
have
Park holds like 37,000 people or something like that. And probably 17,000 are obstructed view. Like
that's a lot. Wild. Of so you'll pay for it and you can't see the game.
Oh yeah. Easy. That's it's because it's so old and like, that's just how it's designed. I love Fenway Park. It's the perfect baseball stadium. Like it makes you feel so like you've stepped back in time. I'm a Red Sox fan, obviously. So like, it is like special to me in that way, but like, it is so much better than any other baseball stadium, despite all its flaws. Like up until the time I was like a teenager, it had a horse trough in the men's bathroom for a urinal and it like everything about it was better. I missed the horse trough. Just a bunch of drunk Boston guys just trying and missing the horse trough is great.
Wow.
Anyways, I don't think a lot of people are going to this game.
Yeah.
It's going to be very cold in late December in Boston. It's between SMU and Virginia, who aren't exactly next door.
Right. I don't know that SMU fans will travel to it.
I wouldn't. Like, if I lived in Dallas, I wouldn't travel to Boston for What is it? I think a middle tier bowl game, but also could be a lower tier bowl game depending on, and it's after Christmas, but you know, it's the first year this game's ever happened. So like, I don't know. I'm excited for the aesthetic to it. I don't know that it is much beyond that. I think it's interesting that both teams are going through coaching transitions. Sonny Dykes left. Jim Levitt's going to be the interim coach for the game. Rhett Lashley hasn't taken over yet for the in-game stuff. Bronco Mendenhall kind of surprisingly announced he's stepping away. So this is his last game as head coach. I just saw earlier today that the OC for Virginia just stepped down, so he won't call plays for the game. A lot of coaching turnover. Danny Gray and Reggie Roberson both opted out for SMU's wide receivers. You know, so they're down a bunch of guys on offense. Yeah, I'm interested by it, but I don't know what to expect from it.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it comes down to SMU is looking to come back from like a pretty dismal end to their season.
Yeah, that's and how Virginia, much focus do they have right now? I don't think much. Like
probably not.
You're
but Virginia, good. Virginia is trying to finish with a winning record. They, you know, yeah,
they're trying to send out their coach on a high note as he steps away for, I don't know the reason exactly. I think he said to spend time with his family.
Yeah. So like, I don't know.
I'm going to pick Virginia because I think they're going to be a little, I think they've got a little bit more to play for. I think they're going to be a little bit more focused.
Okay.
I think SMU's kind of just trying to get through the season right now.
Right.
And
I think I love Jim Levitt and I think he's an incredible motivator of men from what I've heard and my experience with him. So I'm going to go SMU, even though I don't really think they'll win the game, but I'm going to pick them.
Fair enough. No. One more game left.
Yes.
The Cotton Bowl, the College Football Playoff semifinal, December 31st, the day we all want to be watching the semifinal, New Year's Eve, Alabama -13.5 versus Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me everything.
Mm-hmm. I just found out that I will be covering this game. Woo. Very, very excited. Yeah, Cotton Bowl, I'll tell you, of all the bowl games, is one of my favorites. They have the best media hospitality. Oh my God. It's incredible. And my buddy, Scotty Rogers is the VP of communications there now. So, I mean, he's just first class all the way. So, a lot of requests. I was a little nervous about getting credentialed. We did get our photographer Kim in as well. So Kim and I will be there. Our dynamic duo selves. You know, it's going to be great. I don't know how many more storylines you can come out with when it comes to just breaking down what each team has. I mean, everybody knows what you're getting with both teams. I thought it was interesting that came out about the COVID-19 protocols. Now Alabama is returning to their safety protocols from last year. So they're back to wearing masks in the facilities, social distancing during meetings. 90% of the players are vaccinated and received their booster shots. So with this going on
right now,
probably
an abundance of caution. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, we're in a state right now, a stage, not like the state particularly. We're in a stage where we're seeing numbers surge again. People are getting, you know, they're not getting as sick, but we're seeing more people. They're saying this Omicron is very transferable. So that's a worry. And so I was very curious how this was going to affect, you know, the semifinals and then the final. So
I mean, it'll be interesting. I hope it doesn't affect it. I hope that all the teams
and everyone's going home for the holidays.
I don't know that these guys are going home for the holidays, to be honest.
It says that they are. It says Saban and his staff are doing their best to educate players on the risks of the virus and sending them home with a care package with everything they need to stay safe.
Okay. Well, I hope that all the teams do take proper caution. Nothing bad happens. I'm going to say it. I'm not an expert on transferable diseases or anything.
Right.
Like that.
I mean, none of us are.
I don't want to touch it is the best way I can put this. If you can get vaccinated, you should be vaccinated because it helps you not get super sick. I don't think Omicron's as deadly as the other versions, the variants, but I don't know. Shit.
But it appears to be easier to transfer and it's getting more. I mean, my sister is vaccinated. She did get the virus not long ago.
You can get breakthrough cases.
And a lot of people at her work. So she's a district attorney and they deal with the public in courts and they never really closed during COVID, but they didn't have that big an outbreak, but now they are. I mean, there was a lot of cases just this past couple weeks. So, and you've got people traveling for the holidays. Like it's a lot.
Yeah, it is. And there's going to be a burst of it. And I don't know. I hope nothing.
But it is going to play a role to some degree in it. And
at least
we just don't know what
that's going to be. Things,
right. It's going to play some sort of role. So we'll see. We'll have to hit the ground running next week. And I'm going to go to the media day and interview both teams and coaches. So I'm excited to kind of bring some storylines from Dallas for everybody.
Yeah.
So
absolutely. Yeah, no, I think I will touch it. It's just good that since I made it to this point, I
know
I've written kind of extensively about my feelings about just the fact that they made it. And I don't need to rehash them here too much. I will say this, if they do get blown out in the end, well, why is that any different than any other school that makes the playoff semifinal? How is that different than Notre Dame last year against Alabama? If you know what I mean, like, so Alabama could have named the number against Notre Dame, or how's it different than Notre Dame against Clemson, or when Washington made the semifinal, or when, you know, Michigan State went there, like, or Oklahoma half the time they go. Like, I don't want Cincy losing big to become a referendum on ever letting another G5 team into the four playoff format. I don't want it to become a, see, we told you they weren't good enough to make it, or they shouldn't have been there, because the semifinals are kind of always blowouts. But I also don't know that Alabama's going to blow Cincinnati out. I feel like my voice is starting to go. But
we're almost done. One thing I wanted to touch on, Alabama did reveal their Cotton Bowl uniforms. They are very traditional is the word I will use. You know, red, white numbers. They've got the Cotton Bowl patch, the Nike swoosh, and
they want the numbers on the helmet instead of anything crazy. They didn't put it on the helmet all of a sudden.
Yeah, they did the white stripe down the front, you know, down the front of the helmet, and they did the number, but that's pretty much it. It's a very clean, classic throwback kind of look. Not surprising coming from Alabama. So my question is, what are we going to see from Cincinnati?
Neon yellow.
No.
They're going to break out Oregon's uniforms.
I'm wondering if they might go the other direction because they are the young, hip, you know, team versus this.
I know that they do because Luke Fickell's kind of a traditional guy. They'll probably wear.
He is the cool coach, though, that dances.
Cincinnati's got different combinations. They've got white helmets, black helmets, red helmets. They've got red jerseys, black jerseys, white jerseys. Same with the pants sleeve. They've got variations they can do. I don't think it'll be anything crazy.
I don't know, but we'll hopefully find out this week because they haven't revealed them yet. So,
and I do think for the game itself, since they actually matches up pretty well with Alabama, Jameson Williams tore, no, it was Mechie that tore his ACL for Alabama, correct?
Yes.
I believe it was Mechie who tore his ACL. One of the Alabama wide receivers tore his ACL.
I think so.
I know one of them did. I believe it was Mechie. Since they've got a string of really good NFL defensive backs to cover, mm-hmm. they've got a defensive end in Myjai Sanders who can pressure the quarterback. I think that they're a team that's designed to compete with Alabama, at least offensively versus defensively, a lot better than people realize coming into this game. I think they'll scheme and they're going to be coached well enough to compete with them. My concern is how many points they can score on offense, because I don't know how easy it's going to be for them to get open and throw the ball in Alabama with just the size and talent on that side of the ball. I think Alec Pierce needs to have a huge game and probably have three or four big, huge catches downfield since they'd have a realistic shot. Jerome Ford probably needs to also get on his horse for 150 plus yards.
At least. Mm-hmm. I'm actually not sure that Desmond Ridder is going to be able to handle the pain. I really don't. I don't know. It's going to be so much faster.
They need to block for him. There's a lot of people who have started to talk about Desmond Ridder in the draft and where he belongs. I'm not mm-hmm. sold on him like as a draft prospect at all. But, mm-hmm. you know, I just want him to – he knows this offense so well. Just play within himself and not do anything, not make mistakes in this game. Don't let it get worse. And, you know, hopefully your defense can keep you in the game where you're in a position in the fourth quarter to strike at Alabama. And, you know, you're using David versus Goliath a little bit earlier. I believe that that's the type of thing the broadcast is going to be talking about in this game.
Yeah.
Completely possible, but you're going to need a little of that like Boise State Fiesta Bowl magic or UCF Baylor Fiesta Bowl magic.
Yeah.
UCF Auburn Peach Bowl magic or, you know, insert really great upset in a bowl game. You know, they're going to need to find just a magical player too. They're going to need to punch them in the mouth right away. They're going to need to absorb the counterpunch and haymakers that Alabama tries to throw at them. And yeah, you're probably going to need to have a trick play and a couple breaks go your way. But I'm looking forward to seeing what they can do. I really am, because the truth that Notre Dame was the 5 slot. If they made it as the 4 slot Notre Dame, I'd be happy because I grew up a Notre Dame fan. But I'd also be like, God, come on. I just wanted to kind of go to the Fiesta Bowl and win that. I didn't want to go deal with Alabama again and get blown out there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I'm happy that we're getting Cincinnati to get their shot at it. And no, I don't think they'll win, but I think they can keep it pretty damn close.
I disagree. I think it's going to be Alabama by like 2 scores. So. Okay.
Well, that's what the spread is. So way to just like be a Vegas hardliner.
That's just how I feel about
Cincinnati
it.
Cincinnati covers. But I do think Alabama ultimately wins the game. I just, you know, you saw both these teams play in person this year. So I think that there's a lot of credit to be given to that. Kind of like a little insider knowledge. But
I saw Alabama play one of their worst games against Florida, and then I saw Cincinnati play one of their best games against Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's just Alabama, like experience, athleticism, power. I mean, that's coaching.
It's hard to pick against Alabama, and I really don't like Alabama. Like as a, they're the bully on the block that you want to beat, but it's tough.
It is really tough.
Yeah. Looking forward to it though. On the year, we both got the Army Navy game right. My picks are 67-24. You are 54-36. I don't believe you can catch me through bowl season, but we'll see where the final is after bowl season. quick little bit of housekeeping. Temple hired Stan Drayden as their next head coach. He was the running backs coach at Texas before this. A lot of Tom Herman connections to him. Coached Ezekiel Elliott, Bijan Robinson. It's going to be his first head coaching job. I know Fran Brown, the Rutgers OC, had been rumored for the job, and he had a ton of Temple experience. Mm-hmm. But they end up going with Drayden instead, who has some Ohio and Pennsylvania experience. I don't know if any Temple, though. But yeah, what do you think of the hire?
I have no opinion yet.
Yeah.
All right.
So we'll see.
I'm kind of.
I don't know enough about him.
Running backs coach to head coach is a little bit odd, that usually you don't make that jump. But it's his first head coaching job, so he could be great. I just don't know that I'm going to predict he'll be great.
Yeah.
And so some Temple fans on Twitter were trying to debate me because I said that this was a huge rebuild of a job. Like, it's not a big rebuild. You just need a good leader. And I'm like, it's a big rebuild.
Yeah.
I mean, we can agree to disagree because I know you're a Temple fan. I'm not going to convince you, but like, that roster is incredibly young and keeps having massive transfer issues the past couple of years. Like, it's staying young, and it's, you know, like, it's a lot, and the facilities aren't good and the money's not there. It's a lot at Temple to rebuild. So I don't 100% know that a first year head coach, or first time head coach rather, is the perfect idea. I think you maybe want someone who's proven that they can build a winner in the past, and like, has proven that they can do it over the course of time.
Right.
But you also needed someone who you probably weren't paying a super high buyout on, and you can afford if you're Temple, because you just have to pay a buyout on Rod Carey, and it's tough. The money thing makes it tough sometimes. But, you know, we'll see. I think we just want to touch on that. And then early signing day came and went. Cincinnati with the top class in the conference, 38th in the country. UCF with the second best class in the conference, 42nd in the country. Then there's a little bit of fall off to Houston, number 358th in the country. Those are the schools leaving for the Big 12. Not super surprising that they're recruiting at the top of the conference. I'm a little surprised Houston isn't a little bit higher than they are nationally, to be honest. And then if you go down from there, at the bottom, you'll always have Navy, because they're at 125th in the country. That's because of who they're recruiting.
We've been
through this, I think, 100 times on this podcast. It's a different pool of players they're recruiting from. You can't look at their recruiting rankings. Number 10 is Temple, 110th in the country. That's not a good class.
No. But that's to be expected after all that stuff. So
exactly.
Hopefully they bounce back.
You know, USF, 90th in the country, 8th in the conference. A little misleading because they've got a ton of transfers coming in where they're considered, but they're building through transfers this year. Right. Few guys in the recruiting class, a lot of transfers to fill in the gaps. You know, other than that, kind of everyone middling to the pack. Hard to say like what the difference between like 4th in the AAC versus 7th in the AAC really is. You got to recruit guys who fit your system and recruit guys who you think you can develop. Anything else for us, Emily?
No, I think that's it.
All right. I don't have anything else either before my voice completely goes out again.
Right.
All right. I think we are going to be taking a break next week as well, because it's Christmas and New Year's, and we're just going to let it go. And we'll next record after the Cotton Bowl is the plan.
Awesome. In the new year.
Yeah. New year, new podcasts.
Sounds good. But yeah. New year, new us. We'll see.
Exactly. New year, new podcast is the next time you'll see us for the AAC show. In the meantime, you can find me and my nonsense on Twitter at Dan_Morrison96.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Emilnem, EMILNEM.
All right. And we are off.
Happy holidays.